Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
And so right.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and today we're going to learn about how a healthy gut creates a healthy mind. Graduate School of Health in Australia, and a lot more on quality studies from peer-reviewed journals showing you that what we've been talking about for all these decades is ahead of the scale. Also today, I'm going to begin a series on poverty in America. I'm completing, over the next 6 to 8 months, a sequel to Poverty Inc., a very successful documentary done about 3 years ago. This one is different. It's called Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? That was a statement out of the Great Depression. And right now, many people are living as if they were in the Great Depression. But it's people you wouldn't expect. Adjunct professors. And by the way, half of all instructors in college are adjunct professors. They have no rights. They have to renew their contracts generally every 4 months. They have no health care, no sick leave. And they don't get a lot of money. They only make about $2,400 per course, and a course is a semester. So you'd have to load up with a lot of courses just to make like $20,000. $30,000 would be a lot of money for an adjunct. Most don't make that much. Plus, you have 1 in 7 senior citizens are now in dire poverty. That's 1 in 7. And we have a lot of young millennials, and I'm not talking about the spoiled millennials. I'm not talking about those from helicopter parents. I'm talking about just normal families, working middle-class families, and they're lost because they have enormous debt that's not being forgiven, that it should, and the careers that they thought would be there when they entered college are not there today. So I'm going to go into the whole university college system and show you how utterly corrupt it is, how greedy it is. It's all based upon profiteering. We're going to deconstruct everything about debt in the future. And what's important is I have solutions. I will never show you a problem unless I show you the solution. I will show you the 10 professions I do not believe you should be going to school for or going into because they're toast. They're over. Automation, artificial intelligence, the transhumanism. They're going to replace an awful lot of the American workforce, probably upwards of 20% in the next 5 years. So what do we do about it? Solutions all this week. Today, we're going to talk about the biggest scam in America, and then a shorter one, why millennials are struggling to pay their rent. So those two are on for today. We begin with the latest on health. And I have a guest today, too. I wanted people to have more information on how to fight 5G and get their legislators who have been lobbied a lot about supporting 5G as if it's safe and it's not. And we're up against deadlines this week, so I've invited back Deborah Kopold, K-O-P-O-A-L-D. She is going to talk about what we can do and new information that she's uncovered, including a direct collusion between the FCC and the private telecom industry and the cancer risks due to frequencies far in excess of those known to cause cancer, and how the FCC regulations will force 5G technology onto your property. So we're going to do greater in-depth on that today. We begin with the latest on health and healing, and this is a simple study that we've seen so many times. It's this basic. Ask a question, could live bacteria ingested every day be used to prevent and treat mild anxiety and depression? And the answer is yes. I suggested in a 5 year ago study that we did over the summer for 3 months, 500 people who were clinically depressed for at least 3 years had a letter from their doctor and or suffering from anxiety. Most were on meds, and we never tell people to go off their meds. Their doctor can take them off or lower the amount they're using, and that's exactly what happened. And one of the very first processes in this multiple approach to depression was get the good bacteria in and stop producing the bad bacteria. Meat, alcohol, yeasty foods like potato chips create the bad gut bacteria. Good bacteria is just from a good plant-based diet. Olives and turnips, parsnips, kale and broccoli and whole grains like quinoa and brown rice and nuts, that creates the good bacteria. Plus, throw in some fermented foods and you got a super good gut microbiome going on, and that's what this study showed. And the reason is simple. Probiotics are strongly anti-inflammatory. So when I remember sitting with a former city editor, the top man at the New York Journal, that was a newspaper at one time, Journal American, I think it was called. Anyhow, his name was Guy Richards. He was a very respected journalist. And it turns out we were both working on the same subject. The subject at the time was what happened to the Romanovs. Were they killed in Ekaterinburg by the Bolsheviks, as what history has dictated, or was that a false setup so they could escape and end up supporting the whites, what were called the whites, against the reds? The whites were the royalists, the reds were the Bolsheviks. And our research showed that they actually escaped. That story has never been told. It should be. And he was working on it. Anyhow, one day we're sitting there and he bent over in cramps and I said, what's wrong? He's always in my stomach and he started to cough and he was coughing up blood. And I said, what have you had this? Yeah, I've got these ulcers and there's nothing I can do about it. So I said, there is something you can do about it. He said, what's that? I said, what do you eat and drink in a day? And unfortunately, his diet was just terrible, and he drank alcohol. So I put him on a diet, and I said, if you promise to stick with this for just 10 days, you should see a substantial change. And the first thing on the diet was probiotic juice, sauerkraut juice. And if he couldn't get sauerkraut juice, then cabbage juice. And so he did sauerkraut juice, and he did cabbage juice, and a week later, when we met again, he said, the darndest thing, I have no more pain, and no more blood's coming up, and I just saw my doctor, and he said that it's healing. He didn't know why, and so this stuff is working. That was the first time I actually worked with a person who had severe gastrointestinal problems, and generally there's a bacterium. It is a bacterium that can lead to inflammation, it can lead to lesions, and it could lead to cancer, stomach cancer, and Helicobacter, E. pylori. And unfortunately, what most people eat actually feeds it. You want to help that? Cabbage juice, 3 times a day, and sauerkraut juice also. But they're pro-inflammatory, which is anti-inflammatory, and they're probiotic. So the more probiotics you put in your body each day, the less inflammation you have, and there's a direct link between depression and inflammation. The more pro-inflammatory your body is, the more likely you are to have depression. So, one more way to look at that. From the National Cancer Institute comes a good study on aerobic exercise. It lowers the risk of 13 types of cancer. That's correct. Excuse me, according to the National Cancer Institute, most people are aware that regular exercise is beneficial. But conversely, a sedentary lifestyle can be very dangerous. That leads to obesity, diabetes, cardiovascular disease. So the simple truth is this. Physical, mental, and emotional well-being all are improved with exercise. And now there's compelling evidence that regular exercise that is aerobic also contributes to a reduced risk of many types of cancers. 13 to be specific, and it can reduce them up to 42%. Now, that means that the highest end, 42% reduction in cancer, is when you do the most exercise. Power walking, jogging, running, those are all terrific for you. And the highest rate of preventing cancer via esophageal cancer risk. So, and liver cancer goes down by 27% when you're aerobic. So it's important. Remember, we can help with colon cancer, myelomas, neck and head cancers, rectal cancer, bladder cancer, breast cancer. It can drop substantially when you're exercising aerobically. So do your exercise and help prevent cancer. From Maastricht University Medical Center in the Netherlands comes a study on tea and grapes. They found that the mitochondria benefits, especially if you're overweight and you're having green tea and grapes. Why? Because in the green tea, you're going to have E3G, which is a epigallocatechin 3 gallate, and resveratrol, R-E-S-V-E-R-A-T-R-O-L, resveratrol. And that boosts the mitochondria, which are your energy factories in your cells. And it also stimulates fat oxidation, so you burn more fat. This was a randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled study. And it was published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. And we're not talking about a large amount. For 12 weeks, people took 282 milligrams per day of green tea or 80 milligrams of resveratrol. That's not a large amount. So the polyphenols in green tea and grapes make a big difference in reducing markers of oxidative stress and reducing inflammation, helping your body's insulin level. So that's good. Also from Oxford University comes a study about the colors that allow you to sleep or keep you awake. And they showed three different colors that can affect sleep. Relatively simple study. Why is that important? Because the color will induce a sleep that impacts the circadian rhythm of your body. And what they found was when people are exposed to one of the three types of blue light, and a green light, and a yellow light, they found that the team, when exposing to the light, violet, blue, and green, and they found that to get to sleep quicker, blue light would induce sleep the fastest, and it was closest to the peak sensitivity of a pigment. This pigment is called melanopsin, and it's important you have that. But it was the green light that produced rapid sleep. So if you were exposed to green light for maybe 10 minutes before you went to sleep, you generally go to sleep within 1 to 3 minutes. But blue light, and that's the light you get from your computers and your cell phones, that delays sleep up to 19 minutes. So you don't want your computers on. Simply turn off the power to your TV, that's blue light, your computer, that's blue light, and to your cell phone, that's blue light, and your laptop, those are all blue light. So now we have results from a good study that the background light from your computer can delay sleep. From the Shahid Sadoi University Medical Center in Iran, published in the International Journal of Vitamin and Nutrition Research, coenzyme Q10, taken every day for 12 weeks, substantially reduced inflammation. And that's important. Remember, your brain, your central nervous system, the myelin sheath, are all extremely sensitive to cytokines. Cyto, C-Y-T-O, kinds, K-I-N-E-S, And the reason I spell a lot of words for you is because, remember, we're heard worldwide, all over the world. And this is the number one progressive radio program in the world. In fact, I just got the ratings just this morning. Right now, of over 13,000 media outlets, including CNN, all right, which has got a huge audience, we're in the top five. And we've hit number one several times in the whole world with thousands and thousands of stations. And so I always have to assume that not everybody can understand everything. That's why I like to speak a little slower and spell certain words and then give the citations in case someone didn't really understand. They want to go to the journal and download it in their own language. They can do that. So coenzyme Q10 taken for 12 weeks in a double-blind study can turn down inflammation markers in the body. And that means less assault against your brain, your eyes, your heart, your liver, your kidneys. So it's good for you on all levels. Also from Soochow University in China comes a study that shows that calcium is linked to reduced risk of breast cancer. They reviewed 26,000 cases found consuming more calcium-rich foods like kale, seaweed, reduces your risk of developing cancer. Also, I would use vitamin D3 with calcium. They're synergistic. They work well together. And there was nearly a 40% of breast cancer cases could be prevented with changes in lifestyle. So that's important. And in this study, they looked at 870,000 women from 11 surveys. And these were all prospective. So none of the women had a diagnosis of breast cancer during the recruitment. And then they followed them for years. And that's what they found in this meta-analysis. So more calcium, I suggest calcium citrate, C-I-T-R-A-T-E, and that'll do a job. Calcium generally would be around 900 milligrams a day. Also, from the University of Rhode Island comes a study about pomegranate and how it's really good against Alzheimer's. According to the University of Rhode Island, scientists have discovered more about how pomegranate can shield us from Alzheimer's disease. And it's interesting because bacteria in our gut can be key to the fruit's protective powers. And we're good with that. But in Alzheimer's disease, amyloid proteins in the brain form clumps. And to fight the clumping, a compound needs to have molecules that can cross the blood-brain barrier to do their work. And previous research showed that pomegranate extract had anti-Alzheimer's effects, but didn't identify the compounds that made it through the barrier. But now they have determined that, and this was presented through the American Chemical Society's journal Chemical Neuroscience, which is a major journal. And they found 21 compounds, mostly polyphenols. That's what you're getting when you have blueberries, raspberries, tart cherries. But they found them all in pomegranate. And those pass through the blood-brain barrier and help break down that amyloid plaque. And by the way, walnuts also are neuroprotective. That's why I always ask, and there's an article in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease on this, anyone I'm working with who has Alzheimer's, I ask them to take 1 tablespoon of walnut butter a day and put it in their smoothie. But I also ask people to take a whole pint frozen organic pomegranate. They put it in the refrigerator overnight. It thaws out. It's very difficult to get fresh pomegranate. You can get some of the season, but not the rest. And finally, from the University of California at Los Angeles, fructose, which is bad when it's processed, causes genetic changes in the brain that increase the risk of disease. So according to University of California at Los Angeles, when you're having those sweet drinks, sugary drinks and other processed foods containing high fructose corn syrup, that's extremely detrimental to your health. And the pervasiveness of high fructose corn syrup in the American diet has even been blamed for the epidemic of obesity and type 2 diabetes and related disease. But now the scientists at the university have started to uncover the exact reasons why fructose is linked to so many ills. Researchers have discovered that fructose actually alters hundreds of genes in your brain. Those changes are linked to development of many diseases, including diabetes, cardiovascular disease, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, depression, ADHD. So now you can have a natural solution, and that is DHA can help reverse those harmful effects, and you get that through the omega-3 fatty acids. So that's the latest, and this was published in the Journal of eBioMedicine. And one other thing that can help Alzheimer's, from University Eye Clinic in Maastricht in the Netherlands, is lutein, L-U-T-E-I-N. And that helps the brain by turning off inflammation. It's a very powerful carotenoid, much like xanthan, and it plays a role with the omega-3 fatty acids, like DHA that I just mentioned, in cognition. It improves cognition. I'm working with someone right now, in fact, who has severe cognitive challenges, and I have him on a very specific protocol, and I've already seen some major changes. In fact, when he started he came out of the hospital, he came out of intensive care. He was lucky to live, been there for 3 weeks, and his cholesterol level was 303. Now it's down to 84. It's normal. So that is a big problem solved. His blood pressure, normal. And his pain throughout his body, almost gone. And now working on cognition. That'll take a little while. That'll probably take 6 months to a year. But it's working. And high up on that list are the carotenoids and lutein, because it can help with Alzheimer's. Oh, and by the way, from Sloan Kettering Cancer Institute, published in the Journal of Clinical Oncology, exercise cuts cardio events in non-metastatic breast cancer. So if you have non-metastatic breast cancer, exercise. It can reduce the incidence of cardiovascular events. We're 22 minutes into our program. That's the latest on health and nutrition from around the world. We're going to come back, and we have a guest coming up in about 15 minutes, but when we come back, we're going to go into a clip on poverty. I'm going to go two back-to-back. The first one is the biggest scam in America, and then from there, a short one, this is why millennials who are struggling to pay the rent, and I don't think any decent human being wants to see anyone who is homeless or who is challenged and may not have the tools to know how do I cope with this? What are my options? And I think we have a moral responsibility as the people who in no uncertain way cause many of the circumstances that have led to this crisis of disproportionate income inequality in the United States. You no longer have a functional working middle class. You have rich, super rich, uber rich, and then you have, under the rich, you have the professional class, the largest single group. Then you have what historically would have been your working middle class, and then your middle class retired or poor class, and then your abject poverty. You have about eight classes. Now you pretty much have three. You have your rich, and you have your poor. And we're going to break this down over the next 2 weeks. We'll be back in a moment.
Student loan epidemic. It's a big deal.
Is college still worth it? More than 40% of borrowers aren't making payments.
So what's a student to do?
There are only two people willing to give a 17-year-old a $100,000 loan. One is a loan shark, and the other, well, she kind of works for the government. Her name is Sallie Mae. Now think about it. A 17-year-old kid is barely getting their life started. They may have a part-time job, no assets, no credit history. Would you really give a 17-year-old kid $100,000? Would you? You're probably saying, there's no way in the world I would. Well, maybe if it was guaranteed that you're going to get your money back, which, by the way, that's essentially what the government does. And here's what I mean by it. It got started under Carter. Then it became tough during Reagan. And it pretty much became impossible during George W. Bush. But one of the topics recently by Bernie Sanders was college is way too expensive for kids.
We should have free tuition at public colleges and universities. That should be a right of all Americans, regardless of the income of their families.
Which I do agree with Bernie Sanders. However, there's one big question, and here's what it is. How do we fix it? So he proposed taxpayers pay for it, which do you really want to pay more taxes? Do you? You really want to pay for everybody's college education? See, my proposal is slightly different. Rather than having taxpayers pay for it, why don't we investigate and find out why does college cost so much in the first place? We did a little digging just to see where all this money is going to and what's really taking place. And you're going to be absolutely shell-shocked by the numbers. First of all, you pay taxes. I pay taxes. Businesses pay taxes. We may not like it, but we pay taxes. Who doesn't pay taxes? Well, you know who doesn't pay taxes? Colleges and universities. According to the IRS, the vast majority of private and public universities and colleges are tax-exempt entities as defined by Internal Revenue Code Section 501c3. Okay, no big deal. I get it. It's about education. Maybe this makes sense. We shouldn't be taxing them. So this means, obviously, their football ticket sales get taxed, right? Or on-campus concerts that have nothing to do with education, they also get taxed, right? Again, from the IRS, income and activities that are substantially related to the purpose of an institution's tax exemption, charitable contributions received, and investment income. Let me say it again. Investment income are not subject to federal income taxes. Are you kidding me? Can I sign up and start this business called a college or a university? But Pat, come on now. That's got to be only state schools because there's no way in the world that has to go same as private schools, right? Because private is like private enterprise, private businesses. They get taxed, right? Like these Ivy League schools, they should be paying taxes, yes? Well, private schools get the same privileges as public schools under our current tax code. So not only do they not pay taxes on the land, on the tuition, or the sponsorships, or the donations, or the 12% they're raking in annually in capital gains from that bounty. That's a lot of money. But those schools actually have the guts to get money from taxpayers on top of all of that. We're not talking a little bit of money. So billions in, zero out. Rutgers University has 70,000 students enrolled at an average of $26,000 a year. That covers room, board, parking, meal plans, and approximately $2,000 a year in books, which is a scam within a scam. So let's do some math here. Let's take this $26,000 of tuition, multiply times 70,000 students. It equals $1.8 billion on the low end. That's Fortune 500 gross annual revenue type of numbers we're talking about here. However, according to its own website, approximately 26% of Rutgers' revenue comes from tuition, with an additional 22% coming from state subsidies, also known as taxes. You know who pays for it? You pay for it. Having estimated the tuition revenue at $1.8 billion, we can assume that additional revenue they're getting is going to be around $1.5 billion from the citizens of the state of New Jersey. That's nearly $3.5 billion per year. Ready? Tax-free on top of that. Tax-subsidized. By the way, $3.5 billion, the valuation of massive corporations like Yelp and Credit Karma, and as an annual revenue outpaces, ready for this one, the legendary Elon Musk's Tesla. Rutgers University is competing against Tesla every year, tax-free. You tell me if you don't smell a scam here. Let's take a look at what they do with this windfall of cash that they get. They must really give back to community, right? You ready? They hoard it. They organize nonstop donation drives and build these amorphous hedge funds called endowments. It's never enough. Let me give you a stat here. Harvard, a very reputable school, has an endowment of over $36 billion, which, fun fact, according to the IMF, would put Harvard between Bolivia and Bahrain as the 96th largest economy in the world. And based on data from the United Nations, there are over 100 countries with smaller economies than the Harvard endowment alone. Listen, without even accounting for compound interest, their tax-free mountain of cash, just off that endowment alone, Harvard could afford to pay their $50,000 a year tuition for their 6,000 students. You know for how long? Not 10 years, not 30 years, not 50 years, 120 years for free and not asking for another penny. Meanwhile, student debt continues to pile up and has nearly doubled over the past decade, ready, to $1.3 trillion. If you took all our credit card debt, every single one of the credit cards we have in our pocket, you took all of it and combined it together, it's only $977 billion versus $1.3 trillion. One-third of all student loan debt exceeds $100,000, and borrowers now leave school owing on average about $34,000. That's up 70% just the last decade. You may say, well, Pat, I didn't go to college. I don't have any debt. I don't care about any of this kind of stuff. How does this affect me? Listen, we are seeing now the student loan debt has had an adverse effect on other major parts of the economy. Between the high monthly payments and the mounting rate of default on student loans, destroying young people's credit ratings. It's so much harder for them to buy cars, to buy a house, to move on, simply because of the payments they need to be making. But the puppet masters know all of this. They're aware. They know exactly what's taking place. They know this is unsustainable. They know they are charging an arm and a leg and dragging out the process of 4, 5, 10 years, while all of this can be done in 18 months with a laptop and internet connection. Look, you don't have to agree with everything in this video, but consider this for a second here. 20 years ago, if I came to your place, you probably had photo albums everywhere, right? And I come and say, here's my kid, here's my mom, here's my family, all this. Oh, wow, this is so beautiful. When's the last time you had a photo album? We use Instagram today. Everything due to technology has become faster and more efficient, yet college takes longer and costs more. Why is that? Two reasons. Very simple. Greed and politics. College campuses have become havens for political favors and handouts. Look, let's take, for example, University of Virginia. It's the third-ranked public university in America. Did you know this university has 19 members of the board who make the decisions for the school? 17 were appointed by the governor. 17 out of 19. So you may ask, well, Pat, how many is faculty and students? Students get one member. Faculty gets one member. Two out of 19 they get. That's a monopoly in real life if you do it in business, but not when you do it in universities. Out of the 17 you appointed, five of them don't live in the state of Virginia. The 12 who do, 10 of them contributed to his political party. I want to go a little deeper because some people may ask, well, what else would be the motive? Who cares if I sit on a board? I mean, is there really money to be made? They don't get paid a salary, right? Can you imagine the amount of business that's on a college campus? Think about the bigger picture here. Who do you think gets the construction contract to build that new $250 million football stadium? Who do you think gets that? Whose cousin you think happens to get the big Starbucks contract franchise approved to be on campus? Or whose brother-in-law is charging prevailing wage to haul the massive amounts of garbage off campus 5 days a week? Look, I want to make one thing very clear. I'm not anti-education. I'm not anti-learning. I run a business for a living. I read books on a daily basis. I have a wife. I have kids. I have a family. I'm all for education. I was positively influenced by school teachers. I can tell you many educators that changed my life. I joined the Army because of a health and guidance teacher called Miss Sinclair that completely changed my life. We're friends till today. We write letters to each other. I don't have a problem with the educators. I don't have a problem with the educated. I have a problem with the educational system. And the educational system, when I sit down and uncover everything.
Okay, that's just one piece of the puzzle, greed and politics. And he is absolutely correct on this. Remember those of us who went to college back in the 1960s and 70s? We accumulated no debt from that. There were three jobs waiting when we got out. And you didn't necessarily have to know what you wanted in the future unless you were a specialist and wanted to become a doctor, a lawyer, engineer, an architect, something that required specialization. You went to college because you knew that even learning the liberal arts, learning about the classic, learning things you didn't learn in elementary school or high school would help you. It would make you a more aware human being. Now look at today. Student debt is crippling people. It's not fair. Most college kids cannot pay all their amount that is due on a regular basis, so they pay part of it. That immediately kicks it into compounding interest. Today, the average student will not be able to pay off their debt in the next 20 years. And when they do pay it off, they will pay it off twice what the debt originally was because of interest. And yet 40% of the debt is owned by the United States government. So the United States government could, if it chose to, forgive all that debt. But it chooses not to. Too many people have too much money invested. And also think about what he said about Harvard. Duke has a big endowment. Columbia University has an endowment. Yale and Harvard, I believe, has the largest endowment. These endowments, as he said, could pay off every single student, all 6,000 Harvard students, entire tuition of $50,000 for the next 120 years. So why aren't they giving more to the students? Because they still have faculty that are getting paid bupkis. The teachers are not getting the money. The administrators are. The people who are getting those cushy jobs are. And then how they bring in people that they know. So if you can control a system, you can profit from it. The students are not. How often is a student today told the truth that at least 40% of people attending college should not at this time attend college? And certainly not the colleges they would have gone to. They're not told the truth about how many jobs are going to be gone because of automation, artificial intelligence. Law is one profession that's down the tubes. I mean, you're going to have 80% loss of jobs if you're a lawyer. In fact, one of the clips I'm going to be playing tomorrow is a person that graduated, went to work for the top judge in the Superior Court, and now is serving beer at a local bar. Yeah, you'll hear her story. And two people have a job, both school teachers. They can't make ends meet. And they're making $100,000 a year between the two of them. And yet, they're in debt. Why? What's happening in their life that causes this? And what about the people told there are certain professions that are just not there in the future? Get rid of these classes. Why are more people being pushed into PhD programs to keep the classrooms filled? Not because we need or want more PhDs. Because when you go for a PhD, you're really ratcheting up the amount of debt you're going to have. You could easily come out with $400,000, $500,000 in debt. Why haven't we made medical school free? Which we should if we were a humane society. Why? Just even if you were a selfish capitalist, look at the benefit rather than a benevolent humanist. Give a doctor and give a nurse free education. Take away the torturous process of internship and residency, which are inhumane and counterproductive. Give them a living wage from the get-go. So when they exit medical school, they already are making enough income to start a family if they choose to go into an office and not be in debt. The return is that they have to give back to society in ways that we do not have people giving back today. They have to be able to see the poor. They have to be able to not charge everyone. And they have to cap how much they can earn. Therefore, you're taking the greed out, especially the greed from some of these brain surgeons, heart surgeons who can make $1, $2 million a year. Now, what is the likelihood that if you're an oncologist and you can buy a chemotherapy at cost and sell it for retail and make about $7,000, between $5,000 to $7,000 per patient per visit, that's going to give you an extra $1 to $2 million a year in net income. How ethical are you going to be? Are you going to seek non-invasive and other therapies? Some will, most won't. Greed permeates the moment a person realizes that their circumstances can change because they have power they didn't have before. So if we took away no fault and gave no fault medical insurance, meaning no doctor had to pay any longer for malpractice. They didn't have to do extra testing, which is massively overdone, over-medicating, which is done in hospitals all the time. Nurses will say the patient is finished with this routine and regimen of medicine. the doctor will give a new diagnosis to continue the medication. And as a result, the patient's insurance is picking it up with a copay from the insurance from the patient. The patient frequently can go bankrupt. Well, what about the patient's original diagnosis? That's irrelevant. Are we treating patients the best way we can? Not at all on any level. So imagine the same thing now if you controlled the amount of profit someone could make. If you gave every drug had to be at the cost of its generic equivalent. So instead of $30,000 for a hepatitis C drug, it was $2,000, the actual cost. Think of the amount of money, think of the lives saved, and think of controlling a profession by taking the greed and profiteering out of it. This is what we're not looking at, and that's unfortunate. So you see, we have made colleges profit centers, and then they feel they have to compete. Well, we have to have a swimming pool. We have to have a climbing wall. We have to have a more of these programs to entice students. So the basic need for education is morphed into something that has been commodified and commercialized. And it's time that we stripped it down. 90% of college could be taken over the internet with live webinars and counseling in real time, so you actually see the professors. You could stay at home, saving all that time and energy, and still being educated. As the man said, we have the internet today, and the internet of education is just as viable as the education in a classroom. That's just part one of our series. Part two will commence tomorrow. I have about 20 parts to this, so we're going to look at it from every possible angle. We're going to come back in a moment with my guest. Please stay with us. We're going to go to our guests in just a second here, but I just want to mention we now have a whole new studio complex, and we're able then to provide more streaming for programs that otherwise would not have a place on the air, and we're happy about this. I'll be announcing some of these programs. There'll be over 100 over the next 6 months, brand new ones, and with a lot of young people, a lot of young idealists, there'll be a Citizens Journalist Hour. So we're very excited about this, getting more information out. At the same time that Google and Facebook are censoring people who have the truth and they don't want to hear about whistleblowing, we're providing other platforms, and I'll announce those platforms that are not Google and not Facebook that can't be censored. And also we're setting up a completely brand new channel where all of our YouTube, 7 million people last year watched them, and now we'll have one that is not able to be manipulated. We're also looking for a couple new hires. I'm going to be interviewing people for an office manager who is also a special projects developer. We have a lot of new projects and young idealistic attorneys, because we have a lot of litigation that we're going to be in pursuing. We're going after some big people. And so I'm interested in giving an opportunity to the young out of law school who are uncorrupted yet and hopefully will stay that way and have the capacity to do deep research and are smart. And these are good paying jobs. So if you are interested, you can call and speak with Travis in our office, 646-926-5422. Let's say hello to Deborah Kopald. K-O-P-A-L-D. I mentioned her on our last program. She's an environmental consultant to physicians and attorneys on environmental-related illness issues, and she's here to continue our discussion. So here's what I'm going to do, Deborah. I'm going to give you the three areas I'd like for you to go into. First, new documentation that you have uncovered showing a direct collusion between the FCC and the private telecom industry to push through 5G with no interferences from pesky citizens or scientists who say it's dangerous. The cancer risks due to frequencies far in excess of those known to cause cancer and also increase health risks in use of virtual glasses that will be further marketed, and how the FCC regulations will force 5G technology onto private property. And since the FCC argues 5G is perfectly safe, there are no exemptions. Unlike other countries, 5G towers can be put on schools, hospitals, public spaces, on your right on your street and on your building. And why the environmental organizations, all of them, are not discussing 5G? They need to understand its dangers to the environment as well as not just human health issues. Take your time. The forum is yours.
Great. I think that's a good way to organize things. The thing that I just found out about that, interestingly, I don't know why it wasn't public, because what was public were a series of letters by members of Congress, including Senator Blumenthal, Representative Peter DeFazio of Oregon, Tom Suozzi from Long Island, and Anna Eshoo of California, where they did write to the FCC questioning 5G and questioning the rollout. Besides the fact that there's science, which we'll get into in a bit, about these specific frequencies causing problems. The power densities are higher than from other cell towers, and it's the intensification and of the radiation, the power densities, that's escalating the problem. But what came to light recently was a letter dated January 24th, 2018, by Representative Frank Pallone of New Jersey, who is the co-chair of the House Subcommittee on Communications and Technology, along with Mike Doyle. And he basically accused the FCC of collusion with industry. Now, what he's specifically accusing them of, back in September, there were a series of rules and regulations that were promulgated by the FCC that, in fact, violate the Telecom Act, that limit some of the control of localities over the placement of 5G transmitters, making them go up faster, saying that you can't have too many spacing requirements that would make it onerous. There still are setbacks, which are a cornerstone of many cell tower laws, but they're likely to be challenged in court now, because for the 5G to work, you need more of these transmitters in closer, you know, within 50, a few hundred feet of people's houses. Whereas, as we know, because we've discussed this a lot, and you've discussed it, that cell towers have to be a minimum of 1,500 feet away before the power density levels off. And you certainly see studies showing an increase in cancer within those levels, within 1,500 feet, and within 1,000 feet, symptoms of microwave sensitization, including sleep problems, heart problems, headaches, other kind of pain, that sort of thing. So what he has specifically charged is, after these FCC regs went into place in late September, a number of municipalities sued the FCC to roll back these regulations. And so what happened at that time is many of the industries that the FCC regulates put in lawsuits, apparently at the behest of the FCC, and that's where the collusion comes in, put in these lawsuits. They were sort of bogus lawsuits complaining, oh, the FCC doesn't go far enough in giving us, you know, more, you know, rights to force these transmitters up without having to go to court if the localities don't rule by a certain amount of time, because there still has to be a court proceeding if they want to challenge that. So, you know, they have plenty of gifts or goodies, if you will, from the FCC, but they were encouraged to put in these extra lawsuits, because what happens then is there's some kind of rules in federal court. When there are all kinds of lawsuits on the same regulations, they go into a lottery for multi-district litigation, which helped the industry to get a more friendly forum. If everything had wound up in the Ninth Circuit, that tends to be more favorable to non-industry causes. So they did this lottery. It wound up in the 10th District. And when the municipalities tried to get, an injunction on these rules while they were being looked at, so that these 5G transmitters don't go up in the meantime, in which case they'll be grandfathered in, they were denied the injunction. Now, the litigation did wind up getting moved to the 9th, but it was clearly some kind of action, and Frank Pallone appears to have some kind of evidence that somebody told him that people within the FCC were gaming the system, which is of concern. So I think that's where we are with that. And apparently Ajit Pai is under some kind of investigation as well by the own internal FCC watchdog for helping to Sinclair Radio Broadcasting to kind of consolidate its power, its conservative radio and TV, and that he helped them sort of achieve that. So their own internal watchdog is looking at him. So this is a lot of concern, and there is a FCC Commerce, Senate Commerce Committee oversight hearing on Wednesday at 10. I have a meeting with Senator Schumer's staff. I hope that it will be taking place before then. It's sometime this week to be decided. But we really do need to make phone calls into Senator Schumer to ask him, as he's not on this committee, but he is the head of the Senate Democrats, to have better oversight of the FCC, to have a moratorium on new rules and regs until all of these improprieties are looked at. And, of course, you have to also look at this, as well as those other letters I mentioned, in the context of the fact that FCC docket 13-84 from 2013 was never ruled on, where you had all these 900 people weighed in, many scientists, independent doctors, people who are affected by electrohypersensitivity from this radiation, and municipalities saying, look, there is plenty of science that shows that your safety guidelines are inadequate. In fact, the Department of the Interior had written in 2014 to say they're not applicable to today's criterion. So instead of dealing with that issue, which should have been first and foremost before rolling out any of this, this is what continues to happen. And then you have internal games going on where apparently FCC employees are gaming the system in cooperation and in concert with industry to help form shop in litigation. It's called judge shopping. So this is a very, very severe concern. Now, in addition to this, there are other problems as well. There is a bill that was just reintroduced by Thune and Schatz called the Streamlined Small Cell Deployment Act, which basically would jump around all of these lawsuits and codify those FCC rules and regs into law, in which case all of these lawsuits would be effectively a nullity. And without, you know, it would basically short-circuit due process and say, okay, we're just going to make this law anyway. Now, of course, then there would be new lawsuits perhaps about that law and there being unconstitutional and or conflicting with the Telecom Act. But it's very concerning that they act as if this is bipartisan and there's no opposition to this. All of the groups that represent the counties, the cities and towns are vehemently against this. But your average man on the street doesn't understand how serious this is. So another thing that has to be asked of Schumer is to have more rigorous FCC oversight, follow up on Frank Pallone's letter, a moratorium on any more action by the FCC, a moratorium on the Streamlined Small Cell Deployment Act, and as if that weren't enough, there's another docket, number 19-71, that would allow, the FCC would allow the companies to put up cell towers basically on people's houses and bypass local planning and zoning, turning your people's houses, perhaps your neighbor, into a cell tower location. What it is nominally is a review of the so-called OTARD rules, OTARD, in fact, rhyming with retard, and it stands for over-the-air reception devices. So it's things like satellite dishes, which are receivers. They're saying, oh, they should be able to go two ways so that we have a mesh network, so effectively like a little 5G small cell on somebody's individual house. So basically industrialization of, you know, rural areas, neighborhood areas, and all of this should be put in the context of, you know, I always go back to this. Back in 1993, the California Public Utilities Commission said not to put cell towers on hospitals or near schools. Now, and you could extend that guidance to say, well, if there's vulnerable populations in schools and hospitals, there are also ones in residential neighborhoods, whether it's sick people, whether it's children, you know, and whether it's just people generally concerned about their health and not wanting to have excess exposure to microwave radiation. So nobody knows that this existed. If you look around New York, there's plenty of hospitals that have cell towers on the roof where they've leased them out. You have Verizon. It's putting in hotspots in emergency rooms in the metro New York area, and they're doing this with other companies as well, like other doctors' groups, where they're leasing out their closets for Verizon 5G hotspots and the like. That, you know, either you're a medical provider or a telecommunications provider, and many of these esteemed medical establishments seem confused about the two. But this is what is going on. And so this is being cheerleaded by the FCC. And when you go, you know, it's interesting because there was an advertorial, I'll call it, that's the best way to describe it, in the New York Times last Sunday, not this past Sunday, but where they've done this whole partnership with Verizon, the New York Times and the Verizon 5G lab. You can see pictures of the executives from both together. And, of course, the majority shareholder of the New York Times is Carlos Slim Helou, who is the world, or at one point I think he might be now, the world's richest man. And over $45 billion of his wealth at last count was from wireless and 5G technology. So you have a partnership between them. You have the New York Times cheerleading this. And with the Verizon 5G lab, I was kind of going through it because they're trying to act as, oh, 5G will cure cancer. Well, we'll get to a bit in the fact that actually it's going to be causing cancer. But the fact of the matter is they've really kind of manipulated and been misleading about what it does. So they talk about...
Okay, Deborah, we're running out of time here. Let me just make this a little more succinct to end this. We should be contacting every one of our legislators in Washington, D.C. and protesting this. Remember, this is Bill and Hillary Clinton's brainchild. They worked with the FCC to allow them the permission without the cities, without the counties, without the neighbors having an objection clause. It was purely telecommunications all the way. Fortunately, some communities in the United States, like Portland, Oregon, and also just today, the Prime Minister of Poland signs a global appeal to stop 5G. There's a good article in The Natural Blaze by Julian Rose on this. And we have written an article, Richard Gale and myself, on what's wrong with 5G. And we cited the actual 10,000 studies that were reviewed by 26,000 scientists to show why it's extremely dangerous. This is the new tobacco. This is the new asbestos. This is the new talcum powder. This is this is the new GMOs. This is bad to the bone, and we should not allow it. The fact that the New York Times is promoting this and promoting pro-vaccines shouldn't surprise anyone when you realize they also promoted weapons of mass destruction with Judith Miller and got us into Iraq and have not fired anyone because of the consequences. So we don't have a government on our side. We don't have the state government. We don't have the federal government. We don't have the federal agency like the FCC, the Federal Communication Commission. We're on our own. So we have to protest this. And educate yourself before you protest. If you go to PRN.FM, PRN.FM, that's Progressive Radio Network, FM, you will hear and see all the videos of the world's leading scientists talking against 5G under oath at congressional hearings, state hearings, and federal hearings, plus the article you can read and get up to date on. Deborah, thank you very much for being on, and we'll continue keeping the public informed on this issue.
Thank you, Gary.
That's Deborah Kopald, and her website what is her website? I don't know if I have it here. If you're still on, give us your website.
Yeah, it's wirelessrighttoknow.com. As long as I'm still on, do you have any suggestions for what we can do together to do something bigger? You know, we can call and ask people to make phone calls, but we need to do something a little bigger than that.
We will be doing, when I return to the city, which is shortly, we'll be organizing a major demonstration, both in Washington and in Albany. Yes, and in front of the New York Times. So we have a lot on the schedule, and we will be demonstrating. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.